Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Microsoft, Apple, and now Google have all announced native support for passkeys, the next wave of authentication technology that doesn't require you to remember passwords. A New York State bill has been proposed that would require everyone to register in order to buy certain 3D printers because of their potential to print parts for guns. The European Union isn't messing around when it comes to misinformation around the Israel-Hamas war on social media platforms, but we ponder where the fervor was for other atrocities in recent memory. And we shine the spotlight on Trisha Prabhu, who only at 22 years old has received worldwide acclaim in the business world. We've got all this and more for you in episode 102 of The Tech Job. From Columbus, Ohio, I'm your host, Rob Dunwood.
And coming out of Philly, it's your girl, Tech Lifestyle.
And out of Atlanta, this is Terrence Gaines, a.k.a. Brother Tech, a.k.a. back to life, back to reality. Back in town. From my homecoming trip, had a good time, was transported back when I was in, my late teens, early 20s, which is so weird. So, all right. So I want to, for those who went to college or go back to homecomings, whether you're listening live or watching on the replay, I've got a question. What I've noticed, what I thought was dope, but at the same time, I was like, where's everybody else? It was a lot of familiar faces. Most of the alumni that I ran into or I noticed that was there was from the times that I went in school. Most of the events were being run, whether it be the Greeks, whether it be alumni events, whether it be just random meetups or whatever. Most of the people doing the organizing and running of the kind of like the events were my class, sort of people I went to school with, my particular 4-year, set of people. And I was curious, is that because our age is older than us are finally like, all right, well, we just go to homecoming or we just go back to school to visit, but we're not really involved. And then the groups below us, is it they're still in school so they could care less about trying to organize and plan and run things? I just found it weird that my age range, was doing the most of the work at school. And I assumed it would be either in coordination with the older folks who still kind of feel connected, or the younger folks who just got out of school, or those are the ones that are most hype about going back to homecoming. So you think they be running things a little bit more? I just found that weird.
I have a theory. I wonder if what it is that most of the stuff that you would be interested in doing at your homecoming are the things that your age group would be interested in doing at homecoming. Therefore, the things you paid attention to are the things that interest you. And of course, those are the things that interest your peer group. In the same way that the generation in front of you, those folks who are like, in their late 50s to 70s, they're interested in some different things. So the show they may want to go to or the thing they may want to go do is just a little different than what you may want to go do. And clearly them young folks that just graduated, they are definitely interested in some different things than you're interested in. So I kind of wonder if maybe that's what it is, because
it could be bias.
I think too, though, our age group has the most disposable income right now.
And mobility.
And like we can afford and still have the energy to go to the most things. We'll spend the most money. you know, because we got, you know, we working, we established, we want a VIP experience because I know I'm not going nowhere where it's standing room only. Mm-hmm. I need a table and some bottle service. You know what I mean? An older person probably don't want to pay that kind of money. I ain't paying for all that. I don't need no bottle service. What happened to when you just had to go back to, you know what I mean? So like, I think our demographically, our age group has the disposable income to do the type of events and patronize the type of events that are going to make the most money mm-hmm. on a campus. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a economic phenomenon that you witnessed down there is like, okay. who's coming to these parties and going to spend the most money and who's able to do that. I think that's us right now.
Yeah, I
that makes sense.
It completely makes sense because I'm just thinking I'm about to go to NCAT's homecoming in 2 or 3 weeks. And all the stuff we're doing is very age appropriate for Gen Xers. I don't expect mm-hmm. my daughter to be hanging out with me a whole lot outside of maybe going to the step show. But outside of that, she's interested in, I'm not interested in, you know, and things that I'm interested in, she can't afford to go to. She is starving college.
The only thing is I'm not necessarily talking about participating. I'm talking about running it, like who planned it, who was doing the social media for it, you know, who was setting it up. You know, I'm not necessarily talking about what we're into during homecoming. I'm talking about the people actually doing the organizing. Like Stephanie said, you know, we got the disposable income and we have the most, you know, ability to do so versus like the young kids, they ain't got the money like that. And the old kids ain't trying to do all that. Older folks ain't trying to do all that. So
they trying to be in bed by 9:30.
Yeah, right, right. So I could definitely see the capacity would be, you know, our age group. That makes sense.
But mm-hmm. the main question is did you have a great time?
Yeah, no, I had a good time. Went back all my classes, you know, took all my usual routes, you know, from the dorms and all that good stuff. The city.
Did you go to the game?
Yeah, went to the game, actually sat down because all that walking around in the tailgate, only can take so much of that, Jack. But had a good time. DJ D Nice was there, saw him 2 times. He double dipped. He went to an alumni day party and then was also DJing the tailgate experience for a TSU. So I got to see him 2 times. Nice. Rick Ross showed up, you know, he played a lot of the songs that we were, I think he was coming into popularity as soon as we was leaving school, leaving college. So we got the beginning of his music, but he played a lot of stuff that was relatable, you know, But other than that, you know, had a good old time. Like I said, familiar faces, even though, you know, truth be told, I don't remember everybody's names. It's like, hey, you.
What's up, girl?
What up, though?
Hey, girl. What's up, girl?
Me and my wife tried to do the, all right, you introduce, if you run into somebody, you don't know their name. You introduce me. I tell them my name. And then they should tell me their name, and then you are on the side listening. So then you get the name, but it ain't work out quite right.
I don't even play that game, man. I'm like, you know what? I don't remember. I just be like, you know, I don't even remember your name. My bad. Charges in my heart, not my head, not my heart. Tell me your name again, please. I don't even play that game no more because I know. I already know. I ain't going to remember. I already know.
Well, I'm glad you had a good time. And let's have a good time talking about some tech. But before we get to the tech, I want to change it up a little bit. Since Tech Life Steph is wearing the world famous Tech John pink hoodie, let me tell folks where they can go and get some Tech John swag. So if you head over to www.thetechjohn.com/shop, you will find all kind of hats and, you know, and hoodies and T-shirts and sweatshirts and all kind of stuff over there.
The official travel mug here.
Yeah. We got mouse pads over there. There's some of everything over there. So just head over to techjohn.com/shop. And there's all kind of stuff you can get over there. All of that stuff. It all comes to support the show so we can bring this tech to you the way that we bring it to you. But let's get into talking about some of these tech stores. And y'all, I'm going to jump around a little bit. The first one I want to ask you about is, have y'all started using passkeys yet? Because I know that you're both iPhone users and Apple has enabled passkeys. on your devices, but have you started using them yet?
No. The short answer.
What about you, Terrence?
I'm so integrated into Apple's ecosystem, I couldn't tell you if I've used one or not. I can only remember getting the message maybe one time on one website I went to, and it asked to, you set up a passkey. I think it was like eBay. I can't remember because I was trying to.
eBay is definitely a site to support some
gadgets. Mm-hmm. So I think it was eBay. Yeah, I think it was eBay. It asked me, did I want to go passwordless? And I was like, all right, yeah, sure. But I can't remember outside of that any other time I've actively turned it on.
So, and just to let people know who are listening, if you don't know what a passkey is, I'm not going to get into all the technical terms because I don't know that I have all that committed to memory. But what a passkey is, essentially, it is, we're hoping they're going to be what replaces passwords. So instead of you having to type in your username and then remember this password, and we've talked about on the show many times about what all the problems are with using passwords, reusing passwords, passwords getting hacked, you getting phished, all that kind of stuff, is that essentially, when you're using passkeys, you don't have to remember anything. You just have to go to a particular service or website or app that uses them. And then you're going to register just like you would with a password, but you're going to say, I want to go passwordless. And what's going to happen is that you're going to actually create a private key on your phone. You're going to create basically this giant number on your phone that is only on your phone or on your computer, on whatever device you authenticate with. And then there'll be public keys that the server side of whatever application or website you use will hold. And when you go to log in, you basically just authenticate with your phone. It pushes that over to the website or app that you are trying to authenticate with. And then it says, yeah, you're who you say you are, and you're in. There's no password that you have to remember to be able to log in. So to explain how that works, if anybody's ever done any type of two-factor authentication where you may get like a QR code or something like that, and you scan the code and then a number pops up on your phone, and then you copy that number and you paste it into the website after you put your username and password in. It's kind of like doing that, except you don't have to do any of that copying and pasting. You don't have to actually type in passwords and usernames and that type of thing. You literally just use your phone. You use your laptop, anything that can authenticate you. You just use that with. And this technology has been around for a while, but it's just in the last couple of years started coming to the forefront as far as this may be a thing that will replace passwords. And my thought on it was that it's cool technology. I mean, it really is. And it could work, but would it actually be good enough? Would enough people use it for it to get mass adoption to where before the next thing that's better than passkeys comes out that we're on to that? Because in my opinion, it will take years, if not decades, to get off of passwords. But
But also I saw that like you can use, you know, Face ID, a fingerprint sensor, or a PIN code.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, is a PIN code is not more secure than a password? I know the back end of a passkey is more secure. The key that's getting sent, but the PIN code that you would be using to log in and get to the passkey is going to be far less secure than an actual password would be. So I'm like, does it defeat the purpose if it's somebody that's going, cause I looked at when you sent this story, I read through the story and I looked at, you know, the different ways you'd be able to authenticate yourself. And I was like, oh, I could use a PIN code for something. Cause me, I just would more likely, I don't know. That's just how my brain works. I'd be more likely to remember a PIN code than be, you know, super invested in using my Face ID for something or like that, you know, especially on my machine, on my computer. So I was just like, but the PIN code is not going to be more secure than a password would be necessarily. So I kind of feel like that defeats the purpose a little bit.
Here, I'm glad you brought that up, because here's why that PIN code is probably still significantly more secure than what most people use for passwords. Think of it like this. When a threat actor, when a hacker gets access to your password, they're just going to the site and entering in your username and your password. And that's why passwords are inherently insecure, because that's all they need. They just need to know who you are and what you authenticate as. In order In order for them to use your pin, they would also have to have whatever that pin is set up on. So if you set up your passkey on your iPhone, they would have to have your iPhone and your pin in order to be able to authenticate to a website. In my case, on, you know, I've got Windows PC with fingerprint scanner on it. They have to have my laptop and my pin to be able to authenticate.
So it's device specific.
So it's very device specific.
But still, like, okay, so somebody steals my phone and knows my pin.
Well, then there you go.
Yeah. So
they have to be able to get into your phone first. Right. If they know how to get through your phone using your face ID, your thumbprint, or your phone unlock code, they got to get through that first. Then they got to get to the right website that uses the pin that they also know. Right. You know, in order to,
right.
And then what I think you're missing, Stephanie, is even when you suggest to use the pin, like Rob said, you still have to have the device because the key is on the device.
Right.
But primarily, once you use the pin, it's still kind of, I think you still have to use your biometrics to confirm. And then that triggers the, all right, I'm going to give you the key, share the key from the device to the website, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong. So, you still have to use the pass keys. Ultimately, you use the biometrics, either your face
ID. And I mean,
ID,
that may have just been for Google, you know, and Chrome, because I was just the article Rob posted was a
specific for Google
blog post. Yeah, so it could be for Gmail that they are allowing a pin, and some other sites may not do that. It may just be biometric only. But I don't know. Redundant's not the right word, but it was like, it just seemed like it defeated the purpose if you were just going to let people use a pin. But I get the whole device specific kind of aspect of it. You have to have, but people steal laptops and phones all the time too. So
they do. But, you know, I would just say the overwhelming majority, and like, I'm not going to get into percentages, but if I were to, it would be well over 99. That, you know, the overwhelming majority of threat actors are actually able to, you know, to brute force or get your password and authenticate with something. They don't have physical access to your device. They just may have had physical access to the server where your passwords may have been stored or something like that. And that's what they brute force to try to, you know, figure it out. So this is immensely secure compared to that. And Terrence, to your point, no, the pin is the thing. So it's like you could use your fingerprint. You could use face ID, or you could actually use a pin. What you're doing with, you know, by having that pin is that, you know, here's what someone would have to do. They would have to physically have your phone. They would also have to know what sites you've actually created passkeys at, because there's no way on your phone to go look and say, oh, this, here's a passkey for Best Buy. Here's a passkey for this. That's all encrypted data. So they would have to know, okay, I'm going to steal your phone, know who you are, and know, well, you probably have an account over on this thing. Let me go and try, you know, and try this. I don't want to say that that is something that is impossible, but the chances of someone hacking this is less, you know, opportunity for them to do so, because most people don't get their phone stolen in that way, you know, to the point to where it makes sense for somebody just trying to hack, you know, passwords, that's what they would go after. So let me
ask you then, what happens if you lose your device?
So this is where I say that it's still going to take years and years and years for us to get off of this. Or get off of passwords, because every site that I know of at this point still allows you to use passwords. So if you are like, if I go to my Best Buy site, I can log in using a pass key. But if I don't have my pass key, I can log in using a username and password. If I were to go to eBay and I don't have my, don't have my phone, I don't have to log in with the passcode. I can still log in with my username and password. So I'm just wondering, how quickly will we get to the point to where the only way for you to authenticate is with your passcode? And then my gut would tell me is that it would be similar to what happens now. What if you have an account, you cannot remember your password? How, you know, what do? You've got to go through some type of process to prove who you are and then get your account reset so that you could, in some cases, create a new passcode, or in other cases, maybe create a username and password that you could authenticate with.
Well, if that's the case, then they should just arbitrarily switch everybody over to passkeys with a pin, because now it, you know, it's device specific. Yes, but you also only have to remember the pin. So if you don't have the device, you still have that pin.
I've been playing around with it for the last week or so since Google, and I'm bearing the lead there. Reason I'm talking about this is Google is the last major operating system to enable this, and they've actually enabled it by default. So these are just now on if you're using Android or if you're using Chrome or what have you. But so that means that, you know, Microsoft supports them fully. Apple supports them fully. Now Google supports them fully. But when you create your passcodes, I've created them for fingerprints. I've created them for Face ID. It recognizes my eyes on my Samsung phone. I've created them with actual pins. They all work, but they're all different passcodes. You literally can select which one you want to authenticate with, and it gives you that option. So if you wanted to use a pin as a backup in case you lose your device, you still are going to have the problem that if you've lost the device, you don't have anything to type the pin on because you couldn't use the pin on another device. You have to use the pin on the device that it's tied to.
On the device, yeah.
But one of the things that I was thinking about that's going to make this pretty cool, and the reason we're even talking about it, and I put this in the story, is that I happen to be using someone else's MacBook. And we were looking at something, for me specifically, at Amazon that we were, you know, about to purchase. And I wanted to show it to him so I could either, you know, here pass this around and look on my phone, or I'm already sitting at the laptop. Let me just log in to the laptop and I can pull up my Amazon account on their laptop. But normally what I would have to do is, okay, let me go to my phone, figure out my passwords, because I don't remember any passwords. I use a password vault. So now I got to look at my password. Now I got to go type it in, make sure, because my passwords are long. They're probably 20 characters long. I got to type that in. And it's like, you know what? That's just too much pain. Let me just show you on my phone. But using a pass key just made it simple. I just went to the site, said log in using pass keys, and then scanned a QR code on my phone, hit my thumb on it, and I'm logged in as myself on their machine. And I was like, that's pretty cool. And the other thing that I thought is that people are already trained on how to do that. I think the pandemic really helped out with that, because for me at least, and for people that I know, they learned how to actually scan QR codes en masse by going to restaurants and going to places that no longer gave you menus and say, here, scan this, scan to pay, all that kind of stuff.
During the pandemic.
I'm sorry?
I could say going where they wasn't supposed to be during lockdown.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. But people know how to use QR codes. You know how to scan that menu with them. You know how to actually pay with them. So I think that that has probably gone a long way to get people to the point to where, oh, okay, this is just a new way to use passwords. That's how it was for my friend when she said, oh, that's pretty cool. How did you do that? And it's, oh, you know, this is just passkey. It's this new thing. It's built into your operating system. Here's how you turn it on. It took all of a couple of minutes. And, you know, she set that up on her PayPal account. And then she also had a Best Buy account. She set it up on there. It's like, oh, this is pretty cool. So I don't have to use my username and password anymore, which I can never remember anyway. Nope, you can use this. So I just thought it was cool. And I was just wondering if you guys were using them yet.
Yeah, no. All of that to say, no, I am not using passkeys.
So I'm going to do my part. The only way that these things are going to be, you know, or become mass adopted is people tell folks how to use them, tell folks spread to check the them out, spread the word. And hopefully we will just see more and more and more sites that are using them. I feel way more comfortable using this than using just a raw password with no two-factor authentication. So if, like, when I go to, like, you know, I'm waiting for my banking sites to set this up, they are all 2FA, but I would feel okay with using this because, once again, you don't know my username or password and you have to have my physical device to get in. Chances of you doing that is very, 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 very little.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So, Stephanie, you stuck this article in here, and it's about 3D printers. And for certain types of 3D printers, should you actually have to do a background check to find out whether or not the person that is buying the 3D printer is a felon who could potentially 3D print parts to make a firearm?
Yeah, I thought this was super interesting. I was like, wow.
I think so too.
So New York residents eyeing a new 3D printer may soon have to submit a criminal background check if a newly proposed state bill becomes law. The recently introduced legislation, authored by State Senator Jennifer Rajkumar, aims to snub out an increasingly popular loophole where convicted felons would otherwise be prohibited from legally buying a firearm, instead simply 3D print individual components to create an untraceable ghost gun. If passed, New York would join a growing body of states placing restrictions on 3D printers in the name of public safety. The New York bill, called AB 8132, would require a criminal history background check for anyone attempting to purchase a 3D printer capable of fabricating a firearm. It would similarly prohibit the sale of those printers to anyone with a criminal history that disqualifies them from owning a firearm. The bill does not clarify what make or model of printers fall under this category. A lot of states have already made it illegal to sell the blueprints for guns, 3D printed guns and different things like that online. But I thought this was really, really interesting, because there were a few different layers of consideration, in this bill. One of which was the First Amendment, because I know this had been challenged at one point in other states, on First Amendment violations, because they're claiming that, you know, the blueprint part of it, the 3D blueprint part of it, because they're saying like all it is code and instructions, and how are you telling us we can't sell this type of thing? But then too, like, you know, are you infringing on somebody's right to earn a living? Like, somebody might decide, I'm going to start 3D printing. Like, my brother in particular 3D prints a lot of his, he does model trains. He's a big train person, and he does the full layout and, you know, builds a lot of stuff from scratch, and the buildings and the trees and the little trucks and everything that goes into one of those very realistic looking little model layouts. And he 3D prints some of that stuff, like, you know, some of the assets that he put. And he sells some of it. I say all that to say he sells some of those assets on like Etsy and different things like that, because he weathers them and paints them and makes them look super hyper realistic and stuff like that. So, you know, if he had happened to be a convicted felon, now you're infringing on his right to earn a living, because he can't buy the 3D printer he needs to support his art. So it's kind of like, how are you justifying this? It seems like a very fine line. This I get why they want to do it, because the ghost gun thing is real, and you know, folk are being harmed, you know, by the fact that you can print a gun off the internet. But this seems like a very slippery slope and a fine line to dance on, to just ban 3D printers unilaterally from people with criminal felonies and charges and stuff like that. I don't know what y'all think.
What you got, Terrence?
Yeah, it's going to be tough to decide who gets one and who doesn't, if they do fit the criteria, you know, being a convicted felon, like whatever the case may be. Can they go in and say, all right, well, what kind of convicted felon are you? Which would take longer and then muddy up the waters, because maybe it's not as easy as to say, I got arrested, I had nothing to do with guns. Or does the convicted felony, you know, constitute a attitude around crime? Or is it like the specific crime of assault and battery with a deadly weapon, or manslaughter with the use of a dead, you know, what is the conviction for? Are they going to take that in consideration, or is it a blanket thing? If it's a blanket thing, then sure, absolutely. You know, this may be a slippery slope. But at the same time, I guess, we're always wanting our policymakers to be ahead of the curve, you know, and while ghost guns are a real deal, I don't think it's like commercially widespread to where this is running up crazy numbers to where they should be concerned. But if they wait until the numbers run up and everybody, you know, every two or three news stories you hear on TV has been, you know, a deadly weapon has been a 3D printed involved where
the New York Police Department has reportedly seen a 60% increase in ghost guns seized from city streets for the past two consecutive years. So it's only going up. It's only trending.
Right. And if they wait until it gets to some imaginary number like 10,000 reports or whatever case, it may be too late. So it's like we want them to be ahead of the curve. But being ahead of the curve means they got to make these tough decisions as to how it affects regular people, you know, in general, right? And there may be some people, like you mentioned, your brother that may fall through those cracks, unfortunately, you know, and we don't want to, we definitely
well,
don't
want to. Well, he's not a felon,
that.
So he won't fall.
Well, I mean, in your theory, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Not in reality.
Let's go on record. My brother is not a felon.
It's like, Steph, what was you doing on your show? People out here thinking I'm out here living some kind of life. So here's my thought on this. No, I'm not a fan of this at all. So let me put some disclaimers out there. I am a strong proponent of gun reform and sensible gun laws and this and that and the other. However, this is not it. Because you are potentially going to preclude, as in your scenario, Stephanie, someone who, well, I didn't actually print. I wasn't planning on printing ghost guns. I was going to make 3D these little figurines and stuff like that for trains that I do and that I sell as part of my business. What does that have to do with making guns? So you're saying that, well, because I am a felon, I can't own something that potentially could make a gun. Can you own a hammer and an anvil? Can you own a CNC machine? Can you be a tool and die maker? Yeah.
I can still own, you know what I mean? It's a brute force way of dealing with a problem that I think just overreaches.
This is what I initially thought. So there are sex offenders who, when they get out, they literally are forbidden from using the internet or having computers. There are people who have committed fraud using a computer. They get out, they're on parole. They are no longer able to use a computer. They're not allowed to have smartphones unless they've actually been approved by their parole officer. I don't see this being any different. If you are out on parole, then you should not necessarily be able to go buy one of these printers. But I don't know that you go and say, well, everybody who buys a printer, we've got to do a background check, because we're not doing background checks on everybody buying computers. We're not doing background checks on everybody buying smartphones. And they're felons in the same way that have actually been told that you cannot use these things. So folks are going to say, well, the guns could kill people. I do understand that. Cars could kill people. If you were someone who was locked up because you murdered someone with a vehicle, when you have served your time and you get out, you're out on parole. If you're not able to own a vehicle, if you're not able to drive a vehicle, well, that's on you. But we're not going to go make everybody who buys a vehicle have to go through some database to register just in case we want to catch someone who is buying a car who shouldn't be buying one. That's what this feels like to me.
The other way around too. You know, we also carry driver's licenses that
don't need one to buy a car
to be of a. No, require driver's license, not necessarily buy a car, but require driver's licenses to where if you get pulled over for doing something and then they can check your license and see, all right, X, Y, and Z. Right. I guess my point is we want the police when something happens. We always want them to stop being so reactionary, you know, but the pro-actionary part is going to be a tough on us as well, because it will exclude some people. So the question is, well, which one do we want? We want the police to be pro-actionary, you know, and that's going to upset some people. Or do we want them to be reactionary? Like you mentioned, if they get busted on something and they get out on parole, then they can't make a printed gun, but the damage is already being done because they went to prison and then had to get out. So it's like, how do we do the dance, right?
I mean, I get what you're saying, but I think I agree with Rob on this point. Like, I don't want to walk in Best Buy and have to submit my ID to buy a 3D printer just because the potential is there for some criminal to buy a 3D printer and build a gun and print a gun. I don't think the ends justify the means in this point, in this case, and penalizing everybody for the actions of a few. And I look at this as penalizing everybody. The fact that you're forcing every person to submit to a criminal background check, just for the, you know, privilege, I suppose, of buying a 3D printer is penalizing those people who haven't done anything and who aren't convicted felons. I just don't know that you can penalize the many for the few in this particular case. I don't see it.
Yeah, I have no problem if we were to change our gun laws that you have to register to get a gun. You have to, we're going to do a background check, you know, in order for you to get this gun. We're going to look to see whether or not you've actually are a felon and can't have a gun before we sell the gun to you. I'm in favor of all of that. But when you start saying, but we also want to put those rules on things that potentially could generate guns. And it's like, well, like I say, if you give me a hammer and an anvil and enough time and source materials, you come up with a gun. That's how they used to make them. No, seriously. Gunsmiths.
We're doing here.
I know this is facetious, you know, argument, but it is real. If you have a hammer and an anvil in source material and you've got some ridiculous blacksmithing skills, you could create muskets. You could that's how they were created before they were mass produced. Let's move into the 20th century. You got a CNC machine. You got to go get a license for that. You know, you're a tool and die maker. You have to run background checks on everyone who is now a tool and die maker because they actually have the skill set to where they could actually go and create guns, you know, on lathes and smithing machines and all this kind of stuff that, you know, the tools that they use. Shout out to, skill trades. I think that's a bridge too far for me to where we're not just going to check to see whether or not you should be able to buy a gun or not because you have a record. We're going to check to see whether or not anyone should be able to buy a gun or, you know, buy a machine that potentially could create a gun.
Right.
That most people aren't using it for that. So,
and that's the thing. And Shia makes a great point. And Saray, both Shia and Saray make great points. It's like, we all know how our government works and we know that they don't do anything as definitively as they should. They already said in the article that they haven't defined which 3D printers are going to be you know on this list, and so now you get into the area of privacy and what are you doing with all this data. Now you're getting this criminal background checks for everybody that wants a 3D printer. Where is this data being stored? How is it being stored? You know, who's in charge of this information? Is this information being sold? Is it like, it's just, our government doesn't do well when it comes to those questions. And I would not trust them with my personal information just because I went into Best Buy looking to buy a 3D printer for my kid for Christmas. And now all of a sudden I'm on some list. You know what I mean? Like, nah, that's not cool. Mm-mm. That's not cool.
No, I'm not down with that either.
Yeah, that's not cool. They got to do something. I agree. But this ain't the something. This ain't the something. I know they need to go back to the drawing board and get some people who understand this issue a little, because I feel like, you know, they're in these rooms coming up with these ideas, but not actually consulting with people who understand the issue well enough. Cause I can't think that like somebody in tech would have been like, yeah, just put it, do criminal background checks on 3D printers. Like I can't think that somebody in tech would have suggested something like that. So I feel like, you know, ask the people who know and might be able to give you a more viable solution to what is a definitely a 21st century problem and a technical problem. And work with the people who could actually give you a solution that doesn't require, violating people's civil rights.
Right. So y'all, we didn't talk about this last Monday, because it was still fresh, and we hadn't heard any stories that were coming out other than just the, you know, atrocities that happened. But for those who are listening, somehow don't know, there is a war going on in Israel right now. And Hamas, which is rated a terrorist organization, attacked Israel last Saturday of not this past week, but the week before last. And it's just a lot of bad things happen over there. Folks being murdered, tortured, this type of stuff, kidnapped. There's also the response from Israel that is happening in Gaza and the Gaza Strip right now, to where there are a lot of whole folks that have nothing to do with Hamas who are paying ultimate prices with their lives for them going and trying to root out, you know, this terrorist organization. So I just want to put that out there. There's a lot of human toll that is going on. But I do want to bring it around to the Technic angle on this, because the EU, they ain't messing around at all when it comes to misinformation about this war and what's going on. So the European Union is, they basically, their industry chief, Thierry Breton, issued, and this is last Wednesday that this happened, they issued a 24-hour ultimatum to both X and to Meta, where they wanted a response on, what are you doing to combat all of this misinformation, disinformation that's showing up on your platform about what is happening between Israel and Hamas? And X's CEO responded back within that 24-hour window. But her response, Linda Yaccarino, her response was, I don't want to say that it was vague, but it was not specific on, we're doing this thing, we're doing that thing, we're doing the other thing. And so Thierry Breton sent another letter out and says, well, you know what? Now we're launching a formal investigation. Here's what we want. You've got a week to respond. That same letter went to Meta. Meta, however, their response was a little different. They came out with specifics. They said that we're setting up an operation centers with Hebrew and Arabic speaking experts. We've removed 795 distinct pieces of content before you even contacted us, about this over the last 3 days. They're very specific on what they were doing, how they're going to combat this. And the EU, they have not, at least at this point, to my knowledge, they have not come out and said, oh, we're going to investigate you further as well. You got a week to respond to these additional things. So I just want to kind of get your take on that. I wish that we had these kind of laws here, to where you just couldn't be putting all kind of crazy stuff on these social media platforms and saying it's just First Amendment. What are your thoughts on how the EU is responding to just misinformation, disinformation on that is showing up on these platforms, and, you know, the potential dangers of it?
I mean, I appreciate what they're trying to do. And, because misinformation is a problem. You know, you don't want to say, you don't want to be all whataboutism with stuff like this, but I can't help but think about a situation that didn't happen too far in the past, where we didn't get this kind of, shout out to who was the guy? Terry, what's his name? What's their name?
Thierry Breton.
And throwing down the gauntlet and saying you got 24 hours, like Colt Kirby, you got 24 hours to respond and all of that and all of that. But, when Rohingya Muslims were being slaughtered, over in Myanmar, who was doing anything? You know what I mean? Like, and when Amnesty International said that Facebook was kind of directly responsible for that genocide, this got activated very quick. And like I said, I'm not mad. We need to get rid of disinformation wherever it rears its ugly head, but it never sits well when you could have done this and you should have been done this long time ago. I don't know. I there's so many layers to what's going on over there right now, and this just folds into it. I don't even know what I want to say about it, but yeah.
What's your thought, Terrence?
Hopefully this helps everybody. I'm with in agreement with Stephanie. They could have done this a long time ago, and there's probably reasons why they didn't. And there are probably reasons why they're doing it now. But hopefully, I guess the ends justify the means, I guess. I don't know. Hopefully this will be put across the board. And when other stuff in the future comes up as it relates to, you know, crimes against humanity or misinformation in general, if we're talking tech, you know, hopefully this gets spread out across the board to where other groups, other countries, other ethnic backgrounds, everybody gets to use this to their benefit, to where information is not being spread, you know. But Stephanie's right, you know, it's like a lot of other things have been going over the past week. It has been met with furious response. And, right. You know, it prior to this, you know, it's so very hard to do this, and we got to do X, Y, and Z, and this and that and the third. And
oh, then, yeah, it was impossible. You know, it's impossible. There's 2 billion people on the platform. We can't monitor it all the time, you know, real time. But it's an impossible task.
So just a couple of things. But so the reason that
silver lining,
the reason that the EU is even able to respond this way to this incident is they passed something called the Digital Marks Act a little while back. And that the DMA, it has given them some authorities over the social media platforms on how they deal with what they consider to be misinformation, disinformation, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But to your point, you know, Stephanie, I absolutely know where you're coming from and feel the same thing. It's like, well, y'all wouldn't say nothing was happening to people a little bit more melanin, but I get that. Maybe they didn't have the laws in place that they could have gone after it. So I'll just keep it on this particular instance. They are really not messing around, and this could end up costing these companies significant amounts of money if they don't get their acts together on disinformation. And it looks like X, formerly Twitter, is not quite where maybe Meta is, or at least I haven't heard anything yet. I need to go back and look at the news tomorrow morning and see if there's something that comes out, because my gut would tell me they're probably going to go and investigate Meta as well. They're not, you know, innocent. And, you know,
well, my gut is telling me Elon Musk is going to throw a fit like the giant toddler he is, and, you know, figure out how to get around all of this, you know, in the meantime anyway. And maybe this becomes the nail in the coffin for the platform altogether. I don't know, yeah, because we'll see. Gets in the EU. Who knows?
But here's the other part of this. Twitter, and I'm going to say Twitter specifically because X has never been this. Twitter at one point, you know, up until about a year ago, it was considered to be, with all the problems that Twitter had, it was considered to be like that public place for discourse. It was considered to be, you know, the water cooler social media platform. It was a place where journalists, they could get their, you know, this is what's happening on the ground right now. Here's the picture I took with my camera. Here's the video that I'm live streaming right now. That has always been Twitter. That is, you know, that has not carried over to X. Now, granted, no. Since this conflict has started, the amount of those type of news posts that have appeared on X have gone up since they've, you know, recently gone down. But that's not where journalists necessarily want to be. A lot of folks are like, oh, Meta, you need to get Threads up so that Threads can do this type of thing. And Adam Mosseri, who's the head of Instagram, he also heads Threads. Dude came out and said, we flat out ain't trying. I'm paraphrasing what he said. It was like, nah, son, we had not tried to deal with news. It's like, if you are putting news on the platform and you're posting it, that's fine. We're not going to stop you from doing that, but we show enough and not going to promote it. We're not going to be out here highlighting it. We don't want those kind of problems. I believe that Meta has made the decision that there's just not enough money in news for us to be concerned about it. So we're not going to pay you for your news. In as far as news organizations, that is a big thing that's been going on, you know, throughout the summer. Canada is the latest place to do this, to where you have to go and pay news organizations to link to their news. So what does Meta do? Nah, we're good. We're just not going to link to the news. And now the traffic to these sites has gone down precipitously. Australia did this. It was either earlier this year or last year. I can't remember when. And, you know, Meta said the same thing. Nah, we're good. We're just not going to link to your news outlets. Their traffic dropped to the point to where they changed their law and now is allowing Meta to link again without having to pay. But I think that company has just said, we've been down this road before. We see what it gets us, and it is simply not worth it. We will make our billions and billions of dollars not dealing with news. Yeah. So it's just interesting how social media is changing, because, I really believe that Twitter, I think Elon's going to try to turn this thing into a private membership network, to where he can, you know, it's going to kill literally hundreds of millions of people as far as who use it. But if he still got 100 million, 150 million that are paying, a monthly fee, I think he's good with that, and then we'll just do what we want inside of our walled garden.
I really think that's
where they're going.
I don't think they really have too much of a choice at this point. I mean, just the way they decimated what the platform is and what it used to be, like, who still even wants to engage on the platform besides the people that are there specifically to cause discord? So I don't know.
So like I said, I thought it was interesting, and it's like, okay, yeah, you guys are really, you're really going after these companies.
And they snap too. I mean, I'm just, like I said, I'm impressed with the way the EU was able to lay the gauntlet down and the response was right there. And I'm just like, wow, look at what could happen when you actually, yeah, I mean, care
whenever about you want
to. Right. Mm-hmm. When you care about the people being affected, look what can happen. Mm-hmm. And it is what it is, mm-hmm. It is what it is.
So, y'all, I'm looking at the clock. We're right here towards the top of the hour. And Tech Life Steph, you had a spotlight that you're going to read for us this week.
I do.
So why don't you go ahead and tell me, I want to make sure I'm pronouncing her name right, but it's Trisha Prabhu.
Prabhu, yes.
Okay. So why don't you tell us about Trisha Prabhu?
Well, I got the spotlight in honor of National Bullying Prevention Month. This month, October, is National Bullying Prevention Month. And I thought Trisha Prabhu would be a great spotlight. Trisha Prabhu is a 22-year-old innovator, social entrepreneur, global advocate, and the inventor of Rethink, a patented technology and an effective way to detect and stop online hate. In the fall of 2013, Trisha, then just 13 years old, read the shocking news story of a 12-year-old that took her own life after being cyberbullied for a year and a half. As a victim of harassment herself, Trisha was shocked, heartbroken, and outraged. She couldn't be a bystander and decided to be an upstander. In response, Trisha created the patented technology product Rethink, which detects and stops online hate at the source before bullying occurs and the damage is done. Her globally acclaimed research has found that with Rethink, adolescents change their mind 93% of the time and decide not to post an offensive message. As a social entrepreneur, Trisha has received worldwide acclaim in the business world. In 2016, President Obama and the U.S. State Department invited Trisha to the Global Entrepreneurship Summit to showcase her work and share her story with other entrepreneurs. Not long after, Rethink was featured on ABC's hit TV show Shark Tank. In 2019, Rethink was the grand prize winner of Harvard University's President's Innovation Challenge. In 2020, Trisha was named one of the inaugural winners of the prestigious Elevate Prize, as well as an Adrian Chang Fellow at Harvard Kennedy School's Social Innovation and Change Initiative. In 2021, she was the youngest honoree named to Forbes 30 Under 30 Social Impact List. Trisha has also been honored with awards and recognition for her ingenuity in inventing, building, and launching Rethink. For her research and scientific inquiry, Trisha was named a 2014 Google Science Fair Global Finalist. She was also awarded the 2016 MIT Inspire Aristotle Award, as well as the 2016 University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign Illinois High School Innovator Award. She also had the esteemed distinction of showcasing and sharing the Rethink technology at the 2016 White House Science Fair at the invitation of President Obama. For her advocacy, public service, and her commitment to leading an anti-cyberbullying movement, Trisha was selected as a 2015 Global Team Leader by the We Are Family Foundation, conferred the 2016 WebMD Health Hero of the Year Prodigy Award, and received the Anti-Bullying Champion Award by the International Princess Diana Awards, the Global Anti-Bullying Hero Award from Auburn University, and the Upstander Legacy Celebration Award from the Tyler Clementi Foundation. She is also a humble recipient of several other awards, including the Daily Points of Light Honor, awarded by the George H.W. Bush Foundation for extraordinary volunteering and service. Trisha has also sparked a rallying cry against online hate. To date, she has shared the Rethink message in over 100 plus keynotes around the world in three languages, speaking on platforms that include TED, TEDx, the Aspen Ideas Festival, La Ciudad de las Ideas, SAP, Girls Who Code, the Family Online Safety Institute, universities, schools, conferences, and more. Outside of Rethink, Trisha is involved in a number of initiatives that are close to her heart. In 2017, she was elected Illinois' youth governor, the state's first female youth governor in 28 years. She's also an ardent supporter of empowering women in the entrepreneurial community, whether volunteering her time to teach young women how to code at Girls Who Code or leading SoGal Boston, a chapter of the SoGal movement, which is committed to ending the diversity gap in entrepreneurship. Trisha is working to inspire and support a generation of fearless leaders tackling the world's most important issues. Trisha was selected as a Rhodes Scholar in 2022. Trisha is a Harvard graduate and is currently pursuing her research into social sciences of the internet at Oxford University, UK, as a Rhodes Scholar. Trisha is doing the damn thing, y'all.
How old did you say she was?
She is now 22. She started, and I picked her specifically because I was aware that it was National Bullying Prevention Month. And I picked her specifically because when she first created that app, Rethink, she actually, in my presentation for Till Death Do You Tweet, I have, you know, a lot of video clips. Like, I use video clips as kind of reinforcement of the messaging that I'm doing. So when I'm talking about, you know, what damage you might be able to do to your digital footprint and social media, I use clips that show kids getting arrested and, you know, the bullying. But then at the end, I show clips of kids doing positive things online and using social media as a tool and this, that, and the third. And she was one of the kids that was in one of the clips that I used to use back in the day when I first started Till Death You Tweet. And I just thought she had such an innovative idea. And I actually would use, her Rethink app as a resource in the parent presentation that I would give. Because when I talk to the parents at the end, I always include a slide with a whole list of different resources that they could use. And I would always include Rethink as a resource there as well. And it's just so heartening and heartwarming to see that this woman has, you know, from a little girl, taken this ball and ran with it and clearly has made, you know, something of herself beyond anything I could have ever imagined. But just really quickly, because there was a lot in there, but it's not clear what Rethink is. Rethink is actually a alternate keyboard. So you download the app and then it installs an alternate keyboard on your phone. So as you're texting, it's a little bit invasive, but as you're texting, it's looking at what you're writing. And if it looks like you're writing some bullshit, it'll ask you, are you sure you want to post that? And just that little break in, you know, that little break that, and I tell people all the time, I tell kids like, just take a beat before you hit post, before you hit send, just take 2 seconds, take that beat, look at it again and really ask yourself, do I really need to post this? Is this something I really need? And that's what her app does. It breaks that, you know, momentum when your little fingers are furiously about to talk some shit about somebody or bully somebody online. It looks at what you're typing. And if it looks mean or if there's some, you know, profanity in your tweet, in your whatever you're typing or, you know, whatever, it asks you before it lets you post, do you really want to post that? Are you sure you really want to post that? And just that little prompt, I think, gets people to kind of be like, you know what? That's not nice. Let me go head on and just not do. And it's just such a brilliant strategy and a brilliant idea and a simple, elegant solution that, you know, just gets people to think twice before they post. And that's literally the message that I try to promote to young people every time I go out to a school. Think before you post.
She's 22. So she should be either a senior in college or just had graduated college back like in the spring of earlier this year. And she's got all these accolades and doing all this stuff.
And like, what are we doing? She's a scholar at Oxford right now.
That is ridiculous. And just to talk about the tech side of this, because I do have experience with like sentiment analysis. Usually when you're doing sentiment analysis and, you know, and that's essentially what this app is doing, is looking at what's being written. It's looking at what's the words you're writing and is running it against a sentiment engine, but it's doing it in real time on your phone.
Right.
That is freaking ridiculous. Usually these things are running on giant servers and data centers. So like you send an email, the email, it literally is from your Exchange server at work. It's pulling this into this system and it's doing all the sentiment analysis. And then it just puts a hold on whether it can, your email can be sent or not. Same thing with like, you know, these things are built like, you know, you could be running Slack and they can do this kind of stuff. But once again, it's not running on the laptop. It's generally running on a server somewhere with significantly more resources. So the fact that she's able to pull this off on an actual phone, the resources of the phone, is ridiculous.
And she did it when she was 13.
Yeah, that's nuts.
Yeah,
that is nuts. So that is a good one. That might be the longest read.
Yeah,
for,
her bio was, yeah.
But here's the thing. The reason I was saying, it might be the longest one, but she is by far the youngest. I would say almost every, with a few exceptions, almost every other, you know, spotlight that we have done would be old enough to be her, definitely her parent, probably a grandparent, if not a great grandparent or a great great grandparent, because she's so young. So that was a good one.
Yeah. And she deserved all the time to read through her whole, I'm like, she got receipts on everything she's doing. And I just, like I said, I just remember, you know, easily, you know, 6, 7, 8 years ago, she was one of the first people in my presentation that I used as an example in my presentation. So it's nice to see that she's continued to achieve and excel and be successful. So shout out to Trisha.
Absolutely.
All right, y'all. Well, it's time to go ahead and wrap this show up. So we did not have any new patrons this week. But for anyone who would like to support The Tech John, you can head over to patreon.com/The Tech John. That's The Tech, J-A-W-N. We've got multiple tiers over there, any one of which gets you access to our live stream and our after party. So for those of you who don't know, The Tech John is also a live stream, and we do about a 20-30 minute show after the live stream where we're just hanging out with our folks in the community and talking about whatever comes up. So once again, if you like to support the show, any one of our tiers helps, head over to patreon.com/thetech, J-A-W-N, The Tech John, and you can support us there. With that being said, Tech Life Steph, why don't you tell the folks how they can get at you?
You can follow me all around the web at Tech Life Steph and check out my website at stephaniehumphrey.com. Pick up the book on Amazon.
And you can find me all over the internet at Brother Tech. That's BROTHATECH.
And I am at Rob Dunwood on all the things. And we're also at The Tech John on all the things. So come holla at us however you holla. Till we meet again in a week's time. Peace.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.